It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannucco are here. We've got the Apple earnings call from last week. We're going to do a deep dive on that. We'll talk about iPhone 8 rumors and the Apple campus. And yes, a serious security flaw. We'll tell you how to avoid it. It's all coming.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 545, recorded Tuesday, February 7th, 2017. Pretty graphs. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace. Make your next move. Make your website with Squarespace's all-in-one platform. Visit squarespace.com and enter the offer code MACBREAK for a free trial and 10% off. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your house. Go to ring.com/MACBREAK and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with this limited-time offer. And by Texture, access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we get together and talk about Apple. All friends here, Andy Iannucco, Chicago Sun-Times. Great to have you back where you belong.
Yes, you like me to be contained 3,000 miles away in my little box.
It was
so
really
easy to
nice.
Shut me off when I'm not in the studio, isn't it, Leo?
Yes. It was so nice to have you here. And we actually used another segment that you did at What's in My Bag for us when you were out and Screensavers 2 weeks ago. And this past Saturday, we showed that. If people haven't seen it, it's a great. Do we make a Twit bit out of that? We ought to have. What was in Andy's bag? But there was so much in your bag, we actually had to cut it down for length.
Yeah, I wish I had known, I would have like. Yeah, there's my bag is full of wonderments and delights. It is it is the bag
it
of
was
holding.
Awesome! I highly recommend anybody. Yeah, the bag of holding. Anybody wants to have some fun, watch that segment from the new Screensavers last Saturday, which would have been February 4th, I think. Also with us. Hello, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com.
Leo, I was not at all jealous sitting here freezing while Andy was sneaking into Skywalker Ranch. I mean, totally, that was all fine.
He went everywhere. He got to go to Pixar. Did you get into Skywalker Ranch, Andy?
No. Even though I've never been more explicit to Alex about how he keeps saying and saying and saying. But that's okay. Now I know for a fact is that he regards me as riffraff, who would simply embarrass him. It's good to have these things out in the open. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. I do agree.
Oh, it was wonderful watching Andy's travel journal.
Yeah. Did you follow him on Instagram or Facebook or Flickr? Where did you?
Yes.
Where's the best place, Andy, to see all your images?
I've sliced it up like this. Instagram is like where I post lots of things, often right from my phone. I've decided that I'm using Flickr now for more. That's after things have been edited and polished. And
this shot was so good.
Gorgeous.
It blew me away. I love this picture.
I shot that on my way back from doing Mac Break last week. I was on the Golden Gate bus. And then it's an hour with your thoughts, and I'm thinking, oh, you know what? It's about 4:10. We're going to be crossing the Golden Gate Bridge at like 20 minutes before sunset. If I get off the bus, I can run to that beach that I have admired but not actually been to. I might be able to get something fun. And I had my tripod with me. I had my good camera with me. And an hour later, I had wet shoes, but I had a good picture.
But a full heart.
Is this the north side of the bridge or the south side of the bridge?
It's just the west side. There's a place called Marshall's Beach. I'm told that it's actually not far from a nude beach where you don't want to, well, a nude beach, let's say.
No judgment.
The problem is you have to climb down the side of a cliff, and the fact that they've set trails and steps to help you, it helps you, but it's not changing the fact that you have to go down a metric buttload of steps, which means that after you get your beautiful sunset photo, you have to climb up a buttload of steps. Wow. In like the semi-darkness. But I had been to the Golden Gate Bridge like two or three times before I was even aware that there's a pedestrian tunnel that goes underneath the 101 freeway,
right.
That you can actually go to the other side of the bridge. And given that that's the side that faces west, it means that that's the only side that's getting sunlight, unless you're getting up at a crazy stupid hour. And it's a peaceful place. You're not like surrounded by tourists. There was only one other person there, and it was some fellow who I think was taking some sort of a photo instruction or a guided photo thing. All I know is he was from Europe. And he left his wife or girlfriend decided that she didn't want to climb all the way down like the very, very last like goat trail. And she had waited there patiently for an hour for them to come back. Because when I packed up and was going, I was like, wow, you've been waiting here this whole time? And she said, yes, and I'm freezing. Like, okay, hope you like that picture because it's going to be a long flight back to Germany for you, son.
This is... Some gardeners point out the opposite side you normally see. If you go on the other side of the bridge here at the north end, you'll be up on the hill there with looking down into San Francisco. But you wanted to see the sunset in the bay.
Now that's got to be used for OS 10.14.
Isn't that beautiful? Yeah. OS 10. Mac OS Golden Gate. There's got to be one.
Yes.
Yep.
It's available for reasonable terms, Apple.
anyway, nice picture and a bunch of them. And I see a lot of great ones on Flickr. So that's obviously the place to go. And those were all with your OMD mostly?
Yep, that's your Olympus. The Olympus. I absolutely freaking love that camera.
Yep, yep. You saw all the sights. And so did apparently your cows. This is L.A. now.
So I did get some. I did get shots of the cows at Google. So that's I'm still working on that picture. So that's
nice. That's very good. Let's see. Has there been any? Let's see. When we last gathered,
yes,
Renee was running out the door.
Yes,
to listen to the earnings call and
yes, sir.
And write his story. In fact, Serenity Caldwell transcribed this. Why did Serenity get tapped for that? Is she the fastest typer?
She does. She started doing it with Jason Snell many years ago, and she's just kept doing it. Sometimes she still does it with Jason. It's one of her awesome talents.
Wow.
And she gets it done really fast. And I know a lot of people in the investment community, internally, everywhere, just really love them. So
let's hit the highlights. It was a record, once again, quarter for revenue for Apple, their biggest
just
revenue quarter.
Just when you thought.
Yeah. that's pretty impressive. 78.3 million iPhones.
It's a little bit of sleight of hand because it was a leap quarter where they had an extra week compared to previous quarters. It happens every so often. But it's also the holiday quarter, and that is always a record.
It's going to be. Yeah, it's going to be the biggest quarter for sure. And they sold a lot of iPhones. iPad sales continue their slide down. What was it now this time?
It's 13 point. So this is, I am so conflicted about iPad. It's 13.1 million units sold this quarter, which most companies would give the eye teeth of every one of their executives to have a business like that. But it's not growing. It's a shrinking business. It'll probably end up leveling off sort of like the Mac business has. But Apple's not doing it any favors by not telling a story about iPad. It's sort of like, yeah, maybe the update cycles are long. Maybe most people don't need more computers, so they buy an iPad and they keep it 3 to 4 years and they're totally fine with it. But it still feels like since iPad 2 and maybe a little bit with the Verse, that they haven't given people a reason. Michael Gartenberg called it the TiVo problem, where it's hard to tell somebody why a TiVo is amazing, but the minute you really show them, their eyes light up and they have to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, they're facing a couple challenges from people understand the need for an ebook reader or a simple like back of the driver's seat movie player for the kids. And that's covered well with Kindle Fires that cost $50 and are superb for that job. People might even understand the idea of a tablet multi-touch computer. But a lot of those people, because Apple hasn't trained Mac users to understand the idea of multi-touch for productivity, a lot of those people on the Windows side are not going to be tempted to get an iPad instead of a Windows-based multi-touch tablet. So they're kind of navigating the middle ground, saying we're trying to sell you on the idea of something that's priced like a productivity device, but can't do everything a desktop computer can do based on the common definition of a desktop computer, when in truth, it's just as capable for people who typically need a $500 or $600 computer. An iPad Pro can really do the job, and in many cases do it even better.
So there you saw the graph. It's it may be, you know, and that looks like leveled off, doesn't it? I mean, if you look at it,
yeah, it'll probably, like, if you attach the Mac graphic at the end of that, it'll probably end up being what the iPad graphic is. And it's 85% of tablets over $200. And again, 16.1 million units sold in just one quarter. It's a $1 billion business, and those are rare. It sells more than most other technology. It just when it's an Apple product and you compare it to things like iPhone, it looks bad by comparison.
Yeah,
particularly because we're kind of trained to buy a new iPhone every 2 years, every 3 years, unless you're absolute. And we also tend to I buy a new laptop every 2 or 3 years because both my phone and my laptop, these are things I use every single day, and all I really rely on these things. People who buy an iPad, maybe they're not using it as a day-to-day device. So they're like, does it still play Netflix? Yes. Can I still read books on it? Yes. Can I still read comics on it? Great. Okay. So I'm fine with my iPad 3 or my iPad 4.
And again, some people, that's all they want. It sold almost three times as much as Mac sold last quarter. So there's a large swath of the population that is super happy with getting an iPad and sort of using that for what they want to use it for.
These spackle PC, they use just to fill in whatever gaps are left over between their phone and their
I think
and their
they were
desktop.
Just sort of alienated, and they found computers traditional computers unapproachable, and the iPad sort of was something they could get their hands on and feel like they weren't dumb just trying to use it, and that was powerful. And then they bought it, and they were fine with it for the next 3-4 years.
Yeah.
And there may be some juiced up sales in March when new iPads are announced, especially I think if they announce a 10.5.
Yeah,
if they're announced. Oh, come on. Don't say that. Oh, this just in. A commercial. Thank you, Carson.
You really need to have something. Now I know that you've got that really big, like, high ceiling. You need to actually have, like, wires so you can fly things down like Lady Gaga when you need, like, more coffee or one of these little announcements.
I always wanted a pneumatic tube system. Yeah. Yeah, I like a tube right here that just goes boom, right in to my left. Oh, a word from Squarespace, that kind of thing. It'd be great.
Or I'm a transporter. And then you're...
What if you were to buy Carson like a t-shirt cannon, and you could put like a plexiglass slug in there that has the paper, and he could just fire it at your chest, not at your head, at your chest.
Okay. Yeah, that what could possibly go wrong?
What you said.
How about services? This is the number two revenue generator. It was, $24 billion quarter for
Built
services.
On the back of Pokemon Go and Mario Run on the App Store.
So amazing. And they've said this, Apple said this for a while, that services, I'm sorry, $7.2 billion. I don't know where I got
the crazy, not, I don't want to call it crazy, but the amazing prediction that they made that got a lot of attention is that they said it was going to double again over the next few years and then maybe quadruple after that. And when you consider that... it was more than Facebook made the quarter before. At the time when Apple announced this, they were making more money off services than Facebook was making off of everything.
Yeah.
Which is a stupefying, again, sort of like the Apple really suffers from these laws of these numbers are just too big. They're creeping decimals. I don't understand how they're so big.
It really makes you think about it. If they're saying that they're going to double that, do they mean that there's going to be growth in all of their existing services, or do they mean that no, we're going to own Netflix in 2 years, we're going to own Comcast in a couple of years, we are putting everything in place so that we really pivot so that we're not even necessarily anymore a hardware company, we are simply Apple. We are like 3M. We have you'd be surprised that we're in pharmaceuticals. We are in Scotch tape. We are in imaging devices. We build devices for cars. So it really makes you think about what they got in the secret room where they've got the 5-year plan. What they've got on that whiteboard that we can't even imagine.
What is services? What does that include?
iCloud, App Store, iTunes, anything that's delivered that's not subscription revenue, Apple Music, Apple Pay.
Do they break it down at all? Do we know how Apple Pay did, for instance?
They don't break it down in the numbers, but they will sometimes break out the numbers in things like the conference call or give you enough guidance that smart people like a Ben Thompson or Neil Seibert can sort of do the back of the envelope math and figure it out.
Okay. Anything insight from that? Or
I think just what's hard for me is a distortion by the App Store when you deal with things like, again, Pokemon Go revenue in the last few quarters.
Right.
It's just
it makes
so much money off free to play games that it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean they're certainly not making money off of iCloud subscriptions.
Well, see, that's the thing. They're almost apples and oranges because how you do in store sales versus how you do in iCloud.
Apple Music subscriptions is different kind of revenue than one-time sales.
Apple's always been a genius at figuring out where the money is hidden. And it really does look like they figured out that if you can just figure out how to simply sell electrons and never have to manufacture stuff and not have to worry about shipping constraints, not have to worry about having enough stuff in the stores, not having to worry about having to predict which colors and which capacities of these devices is going to sell best. It's not that they would ever want to get out of the hardware business,
then
but they realize that that's... Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is, well, you forget that Amazon makes a hell of a lot of money just off of doing application
AWS,
hosting.
Yeah.
AWS, right. And really, it's not that this has no sunk cost, but it's a lot easier to simply be a utility service than to be someone who, again, has to figure out what happens if there's an earthquake in a part of Asia where a critical part of your manufacturing is happening. That's what's happened with Nikon is delayed now almost a full year in shipping their next generation pocket cameras because the earthquake basically disrupted their ability to manufacture. Or what happens if you have the batteries that you buy for your Keystone product swell up and cause fires? What do you do then? If you are in a services company, you put out the fire at your server farm. You don't tell anybody what happened, and you claim that the reason why you were down for 12 minutes is because of odd activity happening in Russia. And
small
hope that
checksum
people buy
error
it.
That we've corrected.
Or you hope you're
exactly.
Not, you hope you're not GitLab. Did you?
And
hear?
Also, it's a great story for Wall Street to understand because the perpetual fear with iPhone is that there's no room for growth. That if everybody has an iPhone, no one's going to buy two iPhones or very few people. But services seems like an infinite revenue stream, and that makes it more attractive.
Yeah, actually, if you look at by the way, again, thanks to Six Colors and Jason Snell for these great graphs because it really is the easiest way to look at it. If you look at iPhone year over year revenue growth, that's what this chart is. You see this. This last four quarters before this quarter with negative revenue growth and they're back to positive. But it's still nothing like the growth, back in 2015.
I think that's the quarter where they pulled iPhone upgraders forward by having the bigger screens. And that just, it rammed everything a few years ahead. And then those people weren't going to upgrade 2 years in a row. So
now they're back to kind of the growth figures from, 2014 and
And the ASP was interesting because they not only had an iPhone 7 Plus, but it was $20 more than the previous year's Plus. And yet that turned out to be the sleeper hit. They admitted they didn't do the demand forecasting right. So it was more popular than they thought it would be. And more people are buying it. And whether that's some combination of the finishes, the size, maybe the camera is one of the marquee features, but people are actually willing to pay more to get the highest end iPhone, and that raised up the entire revenue stream for the product.
It points to how Apple has to, for the iPhone, they really have to get people's attention with every new release. They can't just simply say, hey, look, we now have the A12 processor, and hey, look, now we have 4D touch. They really have to do something that gets people's attention, whether it is We now have one that's a much larger screen, or now we've got two lenses on it, and it takes much, much better pictures. Not just we're gonna land this point not simply by showing you before and after pictures, but by showing you a picture of a look. It's like a tic tac now. It's not a circle. That's because it's got so many lenses in this thing. So I think Apple's feeling the pinch from. People's engines of excitement are wearing thin at this point. I mean, across the entire industry, where a phone really is more seen like an empty vessel into which you pour a multi-platform app like the Facebook app or the Instagram app or the Snapchat app. People are there. I think there's going to be a lot less loyalty to a specific platform. And when you get to the point where now people are not being tricked into thinking that the iPhone is free, that this is something you're going to be paying $700 to $800, $900 for. This is when they start to say, well, what can I buy that puts $300 back in my pocket? And even though the alternatives aren't as well made, maybe aren't as advanced, maybe aren't as stable, aren't as safe, that's $300.
Just to give you some sense of how important the iPhone is to Apple's profit picture, this is the quarterly profit graph. And the peaks are every fourth quarter. Big peaks. Right. I mean, this is iPhone sales is what's powering
again,
profit.
It makes more money than companies that have exclusive access to fossil fuel.
Yeah. Yeah. Bigger than Exxon.
More than Exxon. Yeah.
Yeah. So clearly the iPhone's important. Clearly the iPhone's holding steady. But as you say, Andy, they need something to get people's attention every Q4. Right. How do you do that this year? I have a bet, you know.
You make it transparent, Leo, and then you bake it into goggles.
So Scoble, what'd you think of that? Scoble was on Twit on Sunday. And man, is he adamant. He is sure that Apple's going to release a clear iPhone for the 10th anniversary iPhone. Is that? I thought that is so outré that I said, I'll tell you what, I'll make a bet, a one-sided bet. You don't even have to give me anything if you're wrong, because I know you're going to be wrong. And I want to, but I will take you to your favorite French restaurant in Paris. Wow, we even made it in the news there. In Paris, if Apple releases a clear iPhone, am I at risk?
Yeah, Georgia and Peter's faces there are just classic with you, Leo. It makes for a very good skeptic sandwich.
I don't think I'm at great risk here.
No. What's really hard about this stuff is that when someone hears rumors, like if you go to Johnny Ive and you say, what's the iPhone 8 going to be? And he sits down and explains it to you, you can give a very good impression of what that phone is. Yeah. You can describe it to people. You can elaborate on it. If you hear whispers here and there, like, oh, it's being made out of glass, and in your mind, glass translates, and I'm not saying this is what happened with Scoble, but in your mind, glass translates into transparency, and then you tell somebody that, and then like that very easily echoes down. And that's why we see a lot of people who can report on excellent data. Like they know certain things about it, but they don't know the story or how or the context or what it actually ends up meaning. And that, I think, is where we get with this. Like Apple is absolutely working on augmented reality and AR, and they're absolutely working on casings for the iPhone that are made out of substances like glass. I mean, on a chemical level.
Here's what I'm going to bet. I think you nailed it, that he heard bits and pieces and assumed that that was a clear iPhone. Augmented reality, we're already seeing this, for instance, with Pokemon Go, where you take the camera's image, put it on the screen, so it's as if you're looking at the world, as if it's a clear phone.
Right, and
that's
he has his
totally
interest.
Doable, and I'm sure that's something that
Scoble has very specific interests about the future, and what he heard is probably filtered through that lens.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to rag on Robert, and you know what? We're going to all be eating crow when Robert's right in 9 months. But
Tim Cook comes out with a transparent iPhone on his face.
I do agree with him that AR is in the future, and I do hope that there'll be something announced this year in AR. But again,
that
to
was
get
the
back
one
to this,
thing that.
Go ahead.
Sorry, in the earnings, when they talked about R&D, a lot of people said, oh, well, Project Titan is not dead. Blah, blah. Project Titan is only a very small part of the special groups that Apple has working. So, yes, that's there and that's being accounted for. But when you look at it, that includes things like AR. It includes a lot of projects that Apple's working on that we may never see, like the TV project of a few years ago.
What were the R&D numbers? Are they up?
I forget what they are. I'd have to look them up again.
Historically, Apple
they are on the rise.
Used to spend less than anybody else on R&D, and people like Ben Thompson and Jean-Louis Gasset would point to that and say, you know, that's unusual for a company of that size to spend so little on R&D, but it did ramp up over the last year or so. And that was obviously Project Titan.
It's also a functioning of how good they are at prototyping, because they can do a lot of things in that little lab that makes them save a lot of money later on.
Right. The R&D is simple if Johnny Ive runs the whole show, right? You don't have 18,000 people working on it.
Yeah.
iPad sales spiked would any quarter, but not any, you know, that slide
they
is still going. We mentioned
problems. They had no new products. Last year they had the iPad Pro 13-inch that they could get a rise out of. They also had what he said was a manufacturing shortage, and I believe that was in education, people buying iPad 2 and iPad Mini. They just couldn't – some supplier – had yield problems, and they had a problem with that. And also, again, demand forecasting is something that they've been struggling with, even on iPad.
As a result, iPad revenue continues to drop. Year-over-year sales growth is in the red now. That's growth, by the way. That means not the sales are going down, but the growth of sales.
Acceleration
is going down. That's kind of confusing. Finally, Mac. Let's talk about Mac sales a little bit. Is Mac flat? It was the most profitable Mac quarter ever, or not profitable revenue-wise. It was the highest revenue for the Macs ever.
Higher price MacBook Pros.
Because of the cost of the MacBook Pro, fourth quarter, if you look at unit sales, this is a fourth quarter moving average. It's pretty flat, as you say, but not... It's, you know,
I mean, the most interesting thing to me, again, was this quarter, at least, was Apple Watch. When you looked at the estimates vary. Some people said
a record quarter. That's all they said.
It was a record quarter. IDC said it was hugely down, and Tim Cook took offense to that.
Oh, that's why he said it's a record quarter.
So, and Neil Seibert's numbers were 5.6, and he went over with me how he does those numbers, and I think he's very good at them. That's one of the
5.6 million units?
5.6 million units would mean it outselled or equaled Mac sales last quarter.
Wow.
And that was severely constrained. Like, you could not go into a store and buy one. And there's that leads people to believe that it could have sold a lot more if availability was higher over the holidays. Yeah. And it led to this great tweet from I think it was Benedict Evans, who said that in the tech community, there's a very big disconnect between what we think of a product and how people actually buy it. And Neil's tweet again was, there are three times as many Apple Watches sold as Amazon Echoes, where that's considered a huge success in the tech community, and Apple Watch is a dismal failure. So it's just a reminder that people out there are buying products in a way that are different than how we often report about them or put them in context.
You know, Andy, your comment that the phone is not distinguished so much anymore, that it's really just a platform for Facebook or Snapchat, which work the same no matter what kind of phone you have, reminds me a little bit about the PC world. Desktop computing has become very much like that. Most people live in the browser, right? So...
Yeah, I mean, we have to. We're all fans of technology. We're all people who love ideas like, isn't it interesting to have a tiny little OLED screen on the keyboard that can change based on what you're doing? We understand the efficacy of certain processors, but again, there are a lot of people. I think the majority of people, they just want a Toyota Camry. They just want the basic car that will get them there. They have no emotional attachment to it. They notice if it's not working. They notice if it's working slowly. Even though people who really really love the design of a premium product, and here I'm including high end HP, high end Dells. That lasts about 2 or 3 weeks, and that just becomes another thing to them. So it's I think Apple is in a position where they can certainly attract that kind of attention by being a design focused company. I think one of the many ways in that they've been smart in positioning themselves is that we are not the computer or the phone that you buy because you just buy whatever phone is in the store when at the time that you need to buy a new phone. We are the ones that we make beautiful devices, a device that, you know, that you're happy to take out of your pocket and put on your dresser and in a little ceramic dish that you bought because it's exactly the right size for this beautiful Cartier style piece of metal that you put in your pocket every single day. That's the way that they're going to continue to sell so many iPhones. The iPhone's going to be for people who do care and who are motivated to spend the extra $200 or $300 for these super expensive devices.
All right, let's take a break. That's the Apple quarterly results in deep dive. Again, thanks to Jason Snell and Six Colors for that set of very beautiful graphs that he does every quarter. You know, he doesn't really. It took me a while to find them on the front page. I don't understand, Jason.
It's been a whole week.
Well, it's like sublinked in his in a post. Jason, you got to be like make that big the front. That should be a whole page. Maybe it is.
It could be a podcast.
Oh, it could be.
He's shy. He doesn't want to be obnoxious.
Yes, he doesn't want to be rude. So if you want to read it, you go to Apple's Leap Quarter, and then. It doesn't even mention the graphs. You have to – where was it? I don't even remember now. Is it down from this? Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a week ago. I think he had him on the front page a week ago.
And okay.
He just moves fast, Leo. He's on to new things.
He's got too many other things. Actually, there's some other stories in here I do want to talk about a little bit in just a bit. But let's take a little break. Love Jason. I want to give him a plug anytime I can.
And a hug.
And a hug.
cuddly fella.
And a high-end IPA.
A question, question for you. How many of you were watching the Super Bowl on Sunday and had to go to johnmalkovich.com?
It was a Super Bowl on Sunday?
Oh, you don't care, do you?
Too many downs.
There was a great Squarespace ad on there and in which John Malkovich is moaning because somebody's taken johnmalkovich.com. Oh, it's back to his regular page now, because for a while it was a fake page. But it was a great Squarespace ad talking about their domain registration and how you should get your name. And Malkovich swears, he gets bleeped, but he swears like four times in this. He's like peeved. He says, "I'm John Malkovich." It's quite funny. I love Squarespace. Their Super Bowl ads have now become a tradition, actually. Squarespace is the place to make your next website. It's never too late to reinvent yourself, to change careers, to launch a creative project. Make your next move known to the world with Squarespace.com. I am such a fan. I love my Squarespace site at leolaporte.com. Squarespace sites are graphical. They're beautiful. They really draw the eye in. That's why artists, performers, creators of all kinds are drawn to Squarespace. It's also great for e-commerce because every Squarespace template has an online store built into it. So it's easy to create a beautiful website and look like an expert right from the start. Select a template design that fits your vision. But that's just a starting point. Completely customizable fonts, colors, page configurations. Doesn't matter if you're not a web expert. Your site will look professionally designed because it is. They have the best designers. And behind the look of the site, the best engineers. But you don't have to do any coding or design. And mobile's built into every single site. So your website looks great no matter what size screen, what device people are visiting. Did you know? I didn't know this. Squarespace has RSS built in. So you can publish content directly from your blog. People can subscribe. Update your content once. Share it simultaneously across all social media platforms. I do that all the time when I do a new blog post on Squarespace. I just updated my list of Audible reads. I added the year 2016 to it, and I made sure that got tweeted and put on Facebook. And it's all kind of automatic. Share and pin it buttons let your visitors do the same. Share their content to their followers. You can put on forms, of course, contact or sign-up forms, applications, surveys. Squarespace enables you to reach your visitors with email campaigns and newsletters. That's because they've got MailChimp built right in. Promote events with a calendar or a list of events. You can even let visitors RSVP directly from your website. And, of course, with Squarespace Commerce, it's the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your online store in a beautiful way. Complete analytics. I love this, so I know exactly, you know, how many page views, how many conversions, what content's popular, what content's not. And, of course, your store built in, all major credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay. It's automatic. Pursue your passion. Make your next move with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com. Use the offer code MACBREAK if you decide to buy, because you get 10% off your initial purchase. Squarespace.com, the offer code MACBREAK. We're talking about the Apple ecosystem with two experts, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Inaka from the Chicago Sun-Times, my friend Roman Loyola, old friend from Tech TV. Oh. Interesting article in Macworld. Rumor has it, Apple working on a new Mac chip to reduce reliance on Intel processors. This coalesces what's clearly been kind of going on for a while in the Apple ecosystem. Apple has such great ARM expertise and more than 1,000 engineers working on chip design. Why not put it in the Mac? And if you put it in with an Intel chip, you eliminate the pain. This also comes from a Bloomberg report from Mark Gurman, of course. What do you think?
Super interesting. I think this is an example we were talking about earlier where you get a bunch of information, but it's what you make of that information that matters. So my understanding is that maybe tangentially this has to do with Intel. Apple has had MacBooks running ARM for years.
Well, I mean, have an ARM processor in our touchpads?
Yeah, absolutely. You have the T1 chip, a variation of the one that's inside the Apple Watch. Yeah. But Apple is doing this thing called Fusion, and they've been doing it for a while, and it sort of sneaks up on you if you don't pay attention. But what that means is, as you start to get super high performance in one area, you start exposing the underneath. It's the same thing why they had big endian, little endian a long time ago with chips. When you start getting to high bits, you become inefficient on the low bits. High performance, they become inefficient on the low performance. So what they started to do with a lot of products, for example, the A10 chip is called the Fusion chip because it has two really powerful cores, but then two really efficient cores to do work that doesn't require those cores. So they can sleep and it can do things more energy efficiently. Fusion Drive does that with SSD and traditional platters. They do that with local versus online in iCloud Photo Library and iCloud Music Library. So the idea of this, as far as I understand it, is to sort of do what they did with a coprocessor, like the M1 coprocessor that just does all the data crunching for motion tracking while the big processor sleeps. There's a bunch of things that need to be done on a MacBook, things like PowerNap and update processing and the whole and file move, things with the new APS system that don't need to be done by the main processor. So they can leave that big power-hungry Intel processor sleeping, and they can have all of this done by a custom Apple processor.
I think this is challenging, though, because remember Motorola did this with the Moto X. We've seen other phones with coprocessors. Apple has a coprocessor, but I thought maybe this would be the next big thing. For instance, Gurman says PowerNap might draw on an ARM processor instead of waking up the Intel processor, which costs a lot of energy. But I think it's challenging. I think the operating system integration is difficult to do. That's the sense I get because people have backed off a little bit on this.
Well, that's why Apple has Apple's advantage that they make everything from the silicone.
If you own
on
the whole stack, you could do it. Yeah.
Yes. So you can start doing things like this. And it really, people still complain about MacBook battery life. And yes, Kaby Lake and Coffee Lake and Cannon Lake are coming, but they're going to be incremental updates
Apple
to that. But if you can do something profound,
don't wait for Intel to do it.
No.
Yeah. And don't depend on Intel. No, that would be a mistake.
Yes.
Yeah. Really, if all they ever did was create a second Mac inside the housing that only works when the Intel processor is asleep, only works when the display is asleep, only works when people are not actually at the computer, there are a lot of possibilities there, and that's also a really great way to start porting parts of the OS permanently to ARM. There are a lot of things that I think that Apple does that are really test balloons, and this could be an opportunity for them to do that, to start to say, well, how much of the Mac experience can we actually run in an ARM processor that would just simply enhance the experience, solve problems for us, stop us from having to wait for Intel to ship a new processor? Is it possible that we can just use Intel CPUs for the heavy iron, the heavy lifting, and all the flashy features like extended battery life, being able to receive email and deliver notifications and pass along notifications while asleep. We can do all that sort of stuff in-house. We'll just require Intel and other makers to do our GPU work and our CPU work.
Here's it's Mark kind of buries the lead. The very last paragraph. Bloomberg News has reported the new chip may first become available in an upgraded version of the MacBook Pro laptop planned for later this year.
Kaby Lake.
Interesting. And a faster version of the 12-inch MacBook and new iMac with multifunctional USB-C connectivity this year. So that I think is the most interesting part, is this might be available this year. This might be something we'll see in new Macs later
this year.
It's
sort of like integrated graphics versus a GPU. Like, you can have both and the system will intelligently switch between them. And also it's huge differentiation for Apple, where you are becoming a PC market.
You're not an Intel only platform. Yeah.
No, and again, many people can't, like, maybe Qualcomm can make a chip that HP could buy to try to do this, but it'll never be as easy as an integrated company doing all of this.
You know who's maybe kind of in this ballpark is Google's Chrome OS, where they can do ARM or Intel, and because they're adding Android functionality to Chrome OS, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see a multi-chip solution there.
Oh, and the brilliance of this is that you at any point you can just toss out the Intel chip and put something else in, because this is all independent of that. So like, you get to advance the state of your machines regardless of whether you continue with Intel or not.
And that's why Intel stock dropped on this news.
Well, people misread it again as Apple switching to ARM, because that's always the big sexy.
This makes more sense to me than Apple switching to ARM. Although, you know, Windows, Microsoft's doing the same thing. They have WOA, Windows on ARM. I mean, they've announced it. This is a real deal. So I think that
Apple's had it for years. It just, again, it becomes a question of, does it make sense for the specific computers in question? And like a MacBook sort of computer, it might make sense. Even if it runs iOS, it might make a lot of sense. But I think, like, for now, my sense is they hang it over Intel like a sort of Damocles, saying, hey, are those chips going to be ready soon, guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Even when the original MacBook came out, the MacBook Nothing, the first thing that I thought is that, oh my goodness, this really is the platform for an ARM-based Mac. There's everything about this reminds me of machines that are designed around ARM-like mobile processors. And so I think there's a lot of truth to the idea that this is a very, very shrewd threat against Intel to say that we don't have to. We've used your stuff because it was easier than developing our own hardware. But if you're developing our own hardware is now easier than going with your stuff, that's certainly something that we can do. But that said, we can't ignore how big of a shift it would be to create a 2-CPU platform for macOS. The ideal would be to make sure that all you have to do in Xcode is just click a checkbox, say yes, please build a fat deployment of this so that it has both support for ARM and Intel and PowerPC, why not? it means that they have to really re-engineer everything to make sure it works perfectly, and so that you don't have a situation where there's what Apple would be perfectly okay with having two different levels of performance for Macs, but not, hey, I'm sorry, you can't run this spreadsheet because it requires this kind of hardware. So it wouldn't be trivial, but Apple likes to control its own destiny. And in a situation with the Mac, where I think that they're willing to take more risks with redefining what the Mac is, because laptops aren't what they see as the future. iOS devices are what they see as the future. And if they are, as we saw with the new MacBook Pro, they're willing to say that we're not developing laptops the same way that the Windows side is developing laptops. We have a very clear idea of who is using these things and what we want to do with them. So if Apple decided that we want to have our second or a third major break in Apple history, the first break being when they went from OS 9 to OS 10, second break being when they went from PowerPC to Intel. Now they could do a third break saying, we know this is going to be a disruptive point in the development of the Mac. We are going to go completely to in-house processors. If you really do need 12 CPUs, if you really do need to build the next version of Toy Story on your desktop, we are not the platform for you anymore, because we are now making machines that are just as useful, deeply useful, but not for everybody anymore.
I do think that's an interesting way to differentiate. It's kind of a two-pronged approach. One, ecosystem lock-in. Two, kind of hardware differentiation that the other guys on the PC side can't do because they don't own the stack.
Yep.
That makes sense. And your tweet last year is prescient, Renee, because, and we mentioned this. Apple acquired PA Risk some years ago. That's a whole chip design company. They have at least a thousand people working on silicon, and now they have a lot of chips: A10, M10, S2, W1, T1 came out since you did this. I think that they snuck up on us, but they've really become
an amazing team.
A chip company, haven't they?
Yeah, it's an amazing team, and they don't have to sell chips, and that gives you an enormous amount of freedom because you're not worried about profit or loss or keeping anything on the shelf. And the thing that there's a couple of things that are super exciting about this. I mean, like, you can imagine a world where Apple became an x86 licensee. You could also imagine a world where Apple was thinking about an iPad Pro, but also thinking about what would it be like if we had a MacBook that ran iOS and had a touch screen, and then tries all these different products and launches them when they think that they're ready. They can literally do anything they want with all these platforms that they have. And some of those won't be great products and will never get launched, but they are absolutely experimenting with all those things.
Yeah, very interesting. Really, really kind of exciting if they...
Modem chips, their own modems maybe. We won't have to worry about Qualcomm and Intel anymore.
Yeah. Clearly they want to do that. I would guess they'd want to do that.
And they wanted to have 5K monitors. They made their own timing controller. You have to love a company that does that. It's not like HP is going, hey, we want a 5K monitor. Let's make our own timing controller.
Hey, speaking of 5K monitors, let's update that story on the monitor that you bought, the nice monitor you bought, and did not have any trouble with your router.
I managed to cause the problem.
Oh, did you?
So what I realized is that I had enough crap on my desk that there was creating enough interference to not have any problem. Yeah, I had serendipitous shielding. So if I put the router right next to the back of the display, I can get it to turn off.
So LG says, yeah, okay, we're going to put more shielding on these. In fact, it can be retrofitted, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what that is. It's like, and this kills me, Leo. We were looking at Samsung saying there wasn't enough tape on their batteries, and now LG saying there's not enough tape inside their display. Is there some huge tape outage? Did Rocket Raccoon take all the tape for his nuclear bomb and not leak?
So if you buy a new LG 5K monitor.
Not yet. The ones manufactured after February will have this.
At some point. Okay. So yeah. They'll have extra shielding. And it's unclear yet. They said it could be retrofitted, how they're going to do that.
Yeah. Do I go to an LG store? Do I go to the Apple store? Yeah.
Or do they just send you, you know, a roll of tinfoil and some tape? And say, put it here. Actually, what was it? I mean, if you were able to fix the problem by stacking stuff on your crap on your desk, it shouldn't be too hard. How far away was the router once you removed the shielding?
Well, now it's a foot away, but if I put it like on the other side where I had like a computer and a display, it was fine within like a foot and a half away.
Okay.
It'd have to be
sitting pretty close to the computer for it to be an issue.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that'll depend on the exact circumstances, but yeah, that shouldn't have happened. Like both Apple and LG should have caught that. That's a dumb thing to ship.
Well, our routers are down the hall.
Mine was in a closet across the room. So I had no problem. There was another really interesting update, and that was Macworld ran battery tests on the MacBook Pros, and they had some surprising results as well. But what I loved about it is they did it just the way I wish the Consumer Reports did. It was multi-factor, so they did web tests. They also did video playback tests and a bunch of other tests. When they found another bug that I believe has since been fixed, but at least they found another bug that would sometimes cause a process to keep going even if you quit the application, which led to much harder. So basically, if the external GPU turned on, there'd be some cases where it wouldn't turn off, and the external GPU always – external, sorry, the discrete GPU will always use more power than the integrated GPU. But they did a bunch of tests, and I understood the tests they did. They explained them. I knew what the problems was, what caused them, and they even explained a couple times when they got extraordinary battery life. And I just thought, like, everyone who – was complaining about us complaining about the tests. That was how you do those tests right. So kudos to Macworld.
Couple of more updates. Apple is now going to build a plant in India to make the iPhone. This was a deal with the Indian government that allowed Apple to put stores in India. Bengaluru will have the new iPhone manufacturer. Is it Foxconn that's going to build the plant or Apple?
I believe it. Yeah. It's not Apple.
Apple's manufacturing plant in India is a go, says Forbes, but it's really manufacturing Apple stuff. But, you know, Foxconn built a plant in Brazil to do this, so
yes.
I would assume it's Foxconn.
I didn't even think to check that. That's a good point. I'll have to look into that.
Apple's decision on initial manufacturing in Bengaluru has further enhanced the reputation of Bengaluru as the most preferred destination for foreign investment and further validation of the state government policies aimed at fostering manufacturing innovation and investment in Karnataka.
Some guy going, really stuck it to Mumbai on this one.
Yeah. Also, go ahead, Andy.
India's really, there's so much potential in India right now. They seem to have a government that understands. Excuse me?
It's going to be a big market. It's as big as China almost, right?
Yeah, not just that, but also they could be another China in 10 or 15 or 20 years,
right?
Because they're making all the right moves. For instance, they understand the great potential, and given that their own power grid is kind of in a mess, the further outside you get from a major population, even in major cities, it's kind of a mess. This has given them an opportunity to basically create a truly 21st century power grid from the ground up, and there are no huge power companies that are trying to stop these things from happening. They're also trying to mobilize its workforce in productive ways, and they're starting to attract a good deal of manufacturing, not just for the Indian market, but for a lot of the Asian market. And they're doing it in such a way that could scale up to a global marketplace. So definitely Foxconn and Apple's interest is in making sure that they could develop products that they can sell in India. Maybe part of their eye is there might be a time when this is going to be the place where you want to make the iPhone 23 or the iPhone 40 if we're still making iPhones back then.
The other thing Apple really wanted, and I don't know if they got this concession, although I think they did, was the right to sell refurbed iPhones in India, which no one else is allowed to do. And that would give them the opportunity to do a low-cost phone. They don't want to make a low-cost phone, but they could sell refurbed iPhones to the Indian market for under $200, and that would give them the you have to have that, or you're not going to be able to sell them. You're competing against $200 phones.
It's interesting to think about how they would actually do that, though, in an official capacity. What would be the Apple? What would be the Apple workflow for taking a trade-in phone and turn and absolutely wiping it to make sure that there's no way this could possibly be reconnected to any previous data or any previous iCloud data? And what would they? What would their standards be for designating this as a certified Apple refurb? And if they're selling them in India, why not consider it in other markets where they can't really they're having troubles competing with right. dirt cheap $30 Android phones.
By the way, Renee, it's Wistron that will be making Wistron. The phones. Wistron has a deal to make the phones in
Memory serves. When they started doing the trade-in program, it was because they were looking at reselling those phones in Latin America, Africa, right. and some of the other
that's what's going to happen to your trade-in. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And they do. I don't think they sell them directly, but I think they sell them to Apple authorized resellers who then resell
yeah.
them.
There were other, incidentally, things that Apple wanted. We don't know exactly what it got, but a 15-year tax holiday on imported parts and equipment, waivers on import duties, lots of concessions.
Until the EU hears about that.
Well, and or President Trump, because, of course, yeah. this is something he would like to see happen as well. He's been saying that since the campaign. He wanted Apple to bring manufacture back to the United States.
I mean, it's going to be interesting because there are a lot of really powerful emerging markets. They call them the BRIC countries, Brazil, Russia, India.
And China.
China. Yeah, yeah, the last one. And all of them are going to want some form of manufacturing. And if other countries decide they want it too, like Germany wants
well, what
German
about Canada?
Like,
why? Where's Justin on all this? Why is it?
I know, right? Like, so what do we, it reminds me of the newsroom. There's like 203 countries and 153 of them want iPhones made locally. I mean, I just don't know how that scales.
I don't know how you do it. I know.
Also, you know, the iPhone is a pretty high precision device. Can you really assemble one while wearing mittens? I don't know.
Hey, yeah, Hoosier, I can make an iPhone.
Yeah.
Talking about.
But it does point out the uncertainty of a change in administration. I think that Apple, if nothing else, they want to make sure that they have a, for lack of a better word, a disaster plan in place. If they are forced to move a certain percentage of their manufacturing to the United States, they want to make sure that they have a plan for how to do that.
Tim Cook's not on.
Interesting.
Go ahead.
There was a really interesting debate going on because Apple's adjusted for the Brexit price differences on the App Store. And I don't think Google Play had for a while. And people were saying it literally cost way more money to buy like dumb things like Pokeballs on the App Store than it did on the Android Store. And that's going to change because everyone's going to normalize those prices. But there's been this outcry saying, why can't Apple help them? Why can't Apple stop these price increases? And it really seems like something beyond Apple's control. But I don't think consumers are going to see it that way.
Did Apple have a representative at the meeting of the president's tech advisory committee?
Not as far as I know.
I don't think so. I'm just seeing if I can find the list of people. There were 17 high-powered executives there. The business council. So it wasn't just tech. So there was GM.
Disney, I think.
Walmart. Bob Iger was not there. He said he had a scheduling conflict. And, of course, Travis Kalanick, of CEO of Uber, resigned a day prior. But I don't see anybody from Apple.
No, I don't believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Elon Musk was there. We saw him come out. You know, Tim Cook would like a seat at that table. Tim, you know, has a lot of things he'd, just as he's visiting with India, he's a lot of things he'd like to get concessions.
It's a difficult situation. It's one of those things that happens when you have financial but not social parity,
right.
or interests that cross over. And everyone's going to have to decide. And also, Apple has a longstanding history of engagement in these issues. They've often said that they believe that if you're not at the table, you can't affect change, which is sort of what Elon Musk's stated philosophy has been. But that might not sit well with all their constituents. So it's going to be an interesting balancing act for a lot of companies for a long time.
Mr. Cook was in Paris over the weekend. Lucky guy. And apparently Apple... Apple has secured a lease on a space on the Champs-Élysées, the shopping boulevard in Paris. Cook said Apple's deciding what to do with the space. Be interesting to see an Apple store there. I don't know what else you would do.
El croissant and baguette.
He said, France has always had a special place for Apple. It's the best place to discover and chat with all musicians, graphic designers, designers or photographers who use our products. There's such creative energy. And, of course, yeah, great coffee.
Yeah.
He didn't say that. I did.
And he tweeted out some pictures of him in a fashion.
Yeah.
At haute couture.
Yeah. Cook reiterated that Apple pays more, you know, with regards to the tax dispute with Ireland and the European Commission. Apple pays more taxes than any company in the world and is not involved in tax evasion. In our view, the law is clear, he said. We have to pay taxes where we create value. Also talked about iPhone production. He says the whole world is represented in Apple's supply chain. Discussions often don't take that into account, instead focusing on where products are assembled. He says we have 4,600 suppliers in Europe and have spent $11 billion on the content. He also, once again, said Apple's interested in augmented reality and artificial intelligence, saying AI has become indispensable and makes the iPhone even better.
You have to say that. Now, ever since Sundar Pichai went on that stage at Google I.O. and talked about AI, everyone has decided that if you don't mention, it's like the local mobile social was three or four years ago. Now you have to be IL, machine learning, and computer vision, or you're not trendy.
Yeah.
Well, because it's Apple is particularly vulnerable here because they make money off of selling hardware, not software. The services aren't quite there yet. And the more smarts you can put into the software behind your hardware, the less important the hardware itself gets. Google just published a paper last week that I was reading this morning about ways to they call it this pixel recursive super resolution for enhancing images, where if there's like a blob of pixels that it doesn't know, and it looks like there could be something there, but doesn't know what it is, this algorithm compares that blob to millions and millions and millions of blobs it's generated from known pictures, and can statistically say that, well, in 80% of the time, a blob that looks like this actually covers up a face that's a corner of a human eye like this. So we're going to resolve that as something that looks like a face that looks like part of a human eye. And the before image is like an 8x8 grid of just a blob of pixels. And the after is a human face that, when compared to what the actual source image was, is actually pretty damn close, like surprisingly close to. So that means that instead of having to pack a phone with all kinds of like new lenses and new image sensors, you can just using AI maybe fix that so that you're just packing pixels inside there. So
isn't that wild? I don't understand how it could even do this. We're showing the images that Google's AI started with on the left, which it basically looks like a blob, and ended up with at the other side, pretty, you know, is it accurate? I don't know. I'd like to see.
Right. Well, it's not, the point of this is, it's not that you'd use that to say, oh my God, I thought that was Gloria Estefan. It's actually somebody else. It's more like you start off with an image, a raw image from, let's say, a camera sensor that is okay, but not great. But after being sent up to the cloud and then back down again, it is as good as what you would get off of a decent, like, 1-inch sensor pocket camera, as good as what you get with camera hardware inside the phone that involves a lot more hardware engineering. So the only reason why I bring it up is that, once again, if Apple is not saying that AI is a force multiplier that can negate a lot of the ways that they make money. So if for no other reason, they have to say that we're going to get the same advantages that everyone else gets. And if you can imagine, this wasn't part of the conversation, but if you can imagine how much of an enhancement that this algorithm can produce on a mid-range, kind of okay, but not great camera phone, imagine how it could enhance a really great camera phone like what you got in the iPhone 7. That's the sort of stuff we're talking about.
Absolutely. My only quibble was that I think a lot of technologies that had different names a year ago are now all being called AI because it's easier for the market to understand. And they like the trendy term.
It is a lot like Blade Runner, though. Zoom, center,
rotate,
enhance.
So maybe that isn't so far-fetched.
But it's also like this, like Andy said, it's being used in photographs. Apple, as far as I know, is also using it in silicon. Like it's gonna run the entire stack, and it's gonna do almost everything. And Tim Cook's talked about it improving battery life already.
Yeah.
On the Apple side, sure, it's gonna be everywhere. It's not gonna be just interface deep. We're gonna see it pervasive through our technologies.
Tim also visited the Marseille Apple store and tweeted in, Renee, you'll have to tell me, idiomatic French. Do you think Tim did that himself, or did he have somebody write it for him?
He's got accents in it. So when I usually see accents, I think that somebody helped because I don't know how.
That's hard to do, right?
Yeah. Or like, how would you know that it's grave or c'est complexe? Like, you know.
Ravi d'être de nouveau en France.
et de rencontrer notre talenteuse équipe à Marseille.
Our talented team in Marseille.
It's nice the team is equipe in French. Équipe.
Équipe, yeah.
I really want to salute that one guy who's like pointing at the camera.
Hey, I'm Tim. Hey, baby.
That's me hanging out with Tim, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm just hanging with Tim.
I got AirPods. Look at AirPods.
He has, what has he got there? These guys are all wearing... earphones.
He's an arc.
This guy,
he's never going to wash that. He's never going to wash that shirt again. It's had Tim Cook's hand on his shoulder.
Yeah, and this guy on the right looks like he's
snuck
into the photo.
Tim was just looking for AirPods. Find them, you don't know where are the AirPods? You can't get them there. And one guy's distracted in the back.
Yeah, you know he's gonna regret that. He's saying, wait till they get a look at me in this pic. Oh,
tell me when to smile. Yeah.
Whoop. That's kind of fun. All right, let's take a little break. We'll come back with more Mac Break. What are you laughing at? Mac?
No, I'm also realizing that I would not respect that guy in the beard if he did not crop that way, 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 way the hell down so that it just becomes a picture of him and him with Tim's Cook on his shoulder, Tim's hand on his shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't even zoom in enough for that. This is
again,
zoomed
again,
in
again,
all the way.
This looks like a job for Pixel Recursive Super Resolution.
There it is. There's my Instagram post.
I would totally be doing that. That would be my profile
pic. Scribble out these people. We don't need them. Our show today brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Did you see the Southern California town where they Ring partnered with the police department there to put Ring doorbells on 1 in 10 homes, and they reduced crime by nearly half because Crook said, we're just going to bypass that old town. We're not going anywhere near that town. That's why the Ring Video Doorbell is so exciting. I love it. I mean, it's a convenience for me. Well, I installed our Ring. It must have been almost a year ago now. It was easy to do. I have the original Ring, and the kit, when you open up the box, comes with everything you need, a drill bit if you need it, screwdriver, even a level, the cable if you want to charge it, because you don't need to have a wired doorbell for this. The Ring doorbell has its own lithium-ion battery, good for a year. We don't use it because I use it on a wired doorbell. I don't need the battery. But it's great, I have to say, because now I have a camera at my front door. I have a microphone at my front door. I have a speaker at my front door. So I know when somebody's at the door, but I also can talk to them. I can see them, and even if I'm not home, I can. Okay, a little white. This is a white lie. Kids, don't lie. But a little white lie. If a bad guy comes to your door, rings the doorbell, say, "Yeah, what do you want? I'm in the bathroom." That's okay. That's okay, isn't it? A little white lie, even if you're not. Even if you're in Marseille visiting the Apple Store, anywhere in the world, your phone will go ding dong. Wall Street Journal named the Ring doorbell the best of CES for 2017. I love this Ring neighborhoods. You can find out more actually at the website, the Wilshire Park story. 55% reduction in burglaries in 6 months. I think this is just what a great story. You ought to have the Ring video doorbell, not just for security, but for convenience. The idea that you'll know when somebody's at your door. I was getting dressed this morning. I heard my phone went ding, not because somebody rang the door, but because somebody was at the door. And I didn't go to the door, but I looked to see who it was. It was okay. It was a family member. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that it's really nice to know. When a couple of days ago when they delivered my June oven, it was a big box, and we were on vacation. We were up in the wine country, and I saw the guy come, and I said, just leave it there, because I think he was going to take it back. He rang the doorbell. The UPS guy rang the doorbell. That usually means, and he had his little box out there to sign it. But I got him to leave it there. It's awesome. Ring.com/MacBreak. Take a look, if you go there, at the Ring of Security kits that include the Ring video doorbell, either the original like I have with the battery or the new Slim Pro model. They also have what they call the stick-up cam, which not because you're going to commit a robbery, but because you could stick it up anywhere. It's wireless. It even comes with a solar panel that keeps it charged. So it can run all day, all night. It has night vision, 1080p HD camera, and just like the other ones, a speaker and a microphone. So you can hear if somebody's prowling around back, you could say something to them. You could scare away the neighbor's dog, whatever. They also have the Ring Chime that plugs into any electrical port, joins the Wi-Fi, and rings when your doorbell rings. That's great for, you know, if you've got an area where you can't hear the doorbell, like your garage or your shop or, you know, your studio or whatever. Somewhere away from the main house, you can still hear the doorbell ring. And, of course, my phone rings. I love it. I know whenever anybody's at the door now, I get a notification and a ring on all my devices. The Ring video doorbell and the security camera and all of this, part of a Ring of Security kit. Go to ring.com/MacBreak and get up to $150 off the Ring of Security kit of your choice. That's ring.com/MacBreak. Such a huge fan of this. And what a success story it has become. ring.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support of MacBreak Weekly. New ad for, speaking of night cameras, late night with the iPhone. This is another shot on iPhone 7 ad, and these are remarkable. Not only stills, but videos, late at night. And that really just showed. Now, this is pretty remarkable. Is it this good? I guess it is. Must be, right? These are real unretouched photos.
Yeah, I mean, they're selected. They chose the ones they like best.
Yeah. Some of these, I mean, we talked about this. We saw the still of some of these last week, and we were talking about this with Alex Lindsay. Like, that shot is so hard to do. A woman, in the foreground, in the background, bright fluorescent lights.
That's the biggest difference for me with the iPhone 7 camera, especially the 7 Plus camera, is it's not that the camera itself is any technological way elite, like in terms of just the raw numbers, but I can get photos that I couldn't get before. And I liken it back to when I first took my 5D Mark III to WWDC, and I was out at 3 in the morning taking pictures of the lines, and it was better than what my eye could see. And I didn't have that with a camera phone until the iPhone 7. Serenity and I went walking across the Brooklyn Bridge at night. And we've taken photos that were better than what our eyes were seeing. And that, to me, was a huge leap forward. It just meant that I had a better chance of getting the photos I wanted in a wider range of circumstances than ever before.
Yeah. Whatever you say about really, these are obviously selected and they're probably professional or certainly very accomplished photographers. But it just shows that you can now, with a camera phone, take images that compete in every respect with the best images taken by
that you couldn't take just a year or two ago.
Yeah.
And it's not just how good that camera is; it's how good these phone-based image enhancement apps are. I'm such a big fan of Snapseed, but even the tools you get in Instagram can change the picture that the camera took into what you remember the scene looking like after only like 2 or 3 minutes of tweaking. It really is a golden age.
Great article in Reuters. Speaking of videos, we've seen a lot of videos of the new spaceship campus. It's getting close. A really interesting article on Reuters about the design perfection sought in this new 2.8 million square foot campus, the spaceship campus. Apple hasn't said how much it's going to cost. Former project managers estimate $5 billion. Tim Cook did not dispute that a few years ago when he was off. That's an amazing. $1 billion allocated for the interior of the main building alone and some really high standards. The in-house construction team said no vents or pipes should be reflected in the glass.
And they don't want anyone to stumble going into an entrance because it might distract an engineer from a brilliant idea.
The guidelines for the special wood used throughout the building ran to some 30 pages. Tolerances are very high. Many projects, the standard eighth of an inch. Apple often demanded far less, even for hidden surfaces. Minute tolerances. 13,000 full-time construction jobs over the last few years. I don't know where they got this document, but this is really fascinating to...
This must be why they've been working on internal mapping so much, because I still don't know. Like, if you and I were in that building, Leo, and I was like, where are you, Leo? I'm at 13 minutes on the clock in the third ring on the fourth floor. Like, how do you find yourself without technology?
Yeah, I'm wondering if, like, are there enough people left over from the Apple II days that, like, if there's a burst pipe or something, say, oh, sorry, we got to fail on track 8, sector 4. we're gonna have to remap that sector.
Great great piece in this Reuters article, talking about the door handle for conference rooms and offices. When Apple tapped general contractors Holder Construction and Rudolph and Sletten to finish the main building in 2015. One of the first orders of business was finalizing a door handle. After months of back and forth, construction workers presented their work to a manager from Apple's in-house team who turned the sample over and over in his hands. Finally, he said he felt a faint bump. The construction team double-checked the measurements, unable to find any imperfections down to the nanometer. Still, Apple insisted on another version. The construction manager, who was so intimately involved in the door handle, did not see its completion down to his last day. Apple was still fiddling with the design after a year and a half of debate. It's like, and they quote Brett Davis, regional director of the District Council 16 Union for Painters and Related Crafts. Workers often had to wear gloves to avoid marring the delicate materials. He said, it's like a painting you don't want to touch. It's definitely going to be something to see. And then he must have been thinking of me when he said this last bit, if they let you in.
I don't know anyone working on this building, but I've known people who've worked on other buildings, and they say it really is a different mentality than they've ever encountered before. Like, they'll say, if we do it this way, you'll save a bunch of money, and Apple will just say, we don't want to do it that way. And they'll say, but you don't understand. If we do it this way, you'll save a lot of money. They'll say, no, you don't understand. That is not our priority here. And it's just they're completely speaking different languages, and they're very flummoxed by Apple, but Apple just wants it done the way they want it done.
Yeah. Once you're in for $5 billion.
That's a billion here.
Does it really matter?
Like they're polishing the concrete on the inside and the outside.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun to see what this place becomes like a year after everyone's moved in. And maybe some of the engineers are like, I know this is a beautiful statement in door handle design, but I can't open it when I've got my hands full of stuff. That's why I ripped it out and replaced it with something I got a true value in Cupertino. This is why I'm propping this door open with a brick, because I can't deal with this anymore.
Last week we played Matthew Roberts video. Duncan Sinfeld has also been doing video from drones of the Apple campus. They're both 4K, which is neat, and but apparently it's very close to being done. The landscaping is being done, and that big circle in the middle is a fountain. Cool. Yeah, inner fountain, and they're installing the rocks. God, I don't think I'll ever get in there, but I sure would like to see it.
They'll find you swimming in the fountain one day.
Yeah, naked, high on roofies.
I'm particularly keen to see if they're investing any money in art. If they are hanging out in public spaces. We've seen in the 20th century, like, one of the things that large companies like to do is show off their taste and their culture.
Yes.
By actually commissioning, like Jackson Pollock famously did a whole bunch of murals for just simple financial services companies and insurance companies.
Right.
And not only was it good for their rep, but it was also, you know, a good investment. So if they were to commission sculpture, if they're commissioning things to hang on the wall in public areas, I really would love to. That's the art book that I would pay $100 for if they actually wound up doing that.
You mentioned that the Beats X headphones will be coming. The official launch date is now February 10th. These are the second headsets after the AirPods to use the W1 chip. These are a little bit different. They have a wire connecting to the two, I guess, making it a little harder to lose.
The second small ones, the larger Beats, use them almost at launch. I didn't know that.
Okay. The ones on your head, the over-the-ear ones, have used them.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are the Solos.
Yeah, I think they were called the Solos. Yeah. I have to double check that. But they were the wireless on-ear or over-ear cans that you put on. And these are, and then, you know, famously, the AirPods were delayed by a month, and then these were delayed by longer than a month. But we're getting two extra colors, so net gain, I'm not sure.
I had such trouble with my AirPods yesterday. I was trying to make a phone call, and they dropped the call three times in a row.
Did you update the firmware on your AirPods? There's new firmware out.
Does it do it automatically?
It should eventually do it automatically. Some people were going into the a general about, scrolling down to AirPods and then seeing what the version was.
Oh, all right. I'll have to find them.
I'm sure you kicked them across the room.
I was really frustrated three times. I'm trying to do a call. This is important work call, conference call. And actually, it wasn't a conference. With an individual, it's kind of embarrassing. He'd start talking and then... And then I'd have to call back three times. Very
did it drop or did it just revert back to the phone?
It revert back to the phone, But then I couldn't go back to the earpods, and then the phone hung at one point. So I went to my iPad mini, started using FaceTime audio, same thing. It's probably, terrible. You know, I'm not saying there's something with it wrong with the AirPods, but. Oh, here's a tweet in German. Thank you. He speaks every language, Mr. Cook does. Here's a tweet. I'm not going to attempt this one.
But one den sweat, I'll shout. I don't know how to say that. Hunter West guy, bye.
I'll have to That's get Chris Marquardt to read this one.
Grandmother be so disappointed in me.
Yeah. Tim's having fun. He's traveling all over the world now, doing all sorts of fun things.
It's his European tour.
Yeah. It's kind of, you know, being an executive of a multinational like Apple really is like being the president of a country, right? You really
Tim, here are the German developers. Tim, here are the French developers.
Yeah. Shake hands, put medals on people. I don't know.
Well, it's a great way to get troops energized. Not just for your own troops, but also if you want to make a deal with somebody, you want to have a good working relationship in the future, and you are on the level of Tim Cook, you're not just the person that got hired 8 months ago after your previous CEO tanked and got kicked out with a $30 million golden parachute. The idea that you're walking the floor, you're meeting people in five minute chunks, and anybody who wants to run into the lobby at that point is free to do that. So at minute number six, the people in the black polo shirts will be like, we'll push you out of the way. Yeah, that's just good diplomacy. It pays back tenfold.
Yeah. Some more Apple iPhone news. This story coming out of the Cult of Mac, looking at a patented trademark filing for Apple for using lasers to polish ceramic phones, iPhones. I would love a ceramic phone. I would buy a phone just for the ceramic.
Yeah, that was on my mind. I was speaking before about some things being trial balloons, and I was wondering if the ceramic Apple Watch is a trial balloon for let's see what the problems are about using a ceramic case design and manufacturing it at scale. Can we get the reject rate down? Can we figure out exactly what the problems are before we try to sell these to 100 million people a week for 10 years? Because this is exactly the sort of thing that I think that floats Apple's boat. The idea of here is an exotic material. Here is a design that no one can even do. They can't just work out the engineering on that. And then something that will make it look even more and feel more like a premium device that earns every penny of the $900 that people spend for this thing. So that's right up Apple's alley.
I was dreaming about that. And then Greg, I forgot how to pronounce his last name. He's the guy who made a bunch of the different accessories. He's a product manufacturer, threw a bunch of cold water when he started to explain how many CNC machines Apple has bought and how many kilns they would have to buy and how hard a process it is to convert to a kiln-based manufacturing system at iPhone scale. So I would love to have that product, but he made a compelling argument for why that's a really hard thing to do.
So they are making, as you point out, the Apple iWatch Studio, the $1,200 high-end now, replacing the gold one. Studio Surface. Out of the white ceramic. I have it. It's very white. It's beautiful.
I'm getting one, Leo. So
My boss had one.
Well, no, my boss had one, but now he's reverted to being Crackberry Kevin because there's a new Blackberry coming. So he doesn't want his Apple products anymore. So I very quickly dibbed the Apple Watch. I know.
I haven't scratched it. There's no visible marring on the surface. I'll have to get a little magnifying lens and look at it. But I've had ceramic watches before for years, and I love the material. I think it would be a perfect phone material, but you know, it is telling that no one has done this yet.
And they haven't made a ceramic band for it yet, which would be expensive, but also be very nice looking. Yeah.
Oh, I miss.
Also, crackle it, wouldn't it?
I had a German Jungens, was a German watch manufacturer.
They have. He's got a ceramic watch too, and it has a ceramic band on it. It's a white one too. It looks beautiful.
Had a black Jungens, and I miss it.
Apparently, it's really strong.
Oh, I never scratched. It looked brand new. I had it for years. It's my all-time favorite watch. I had a titanium Jungens and a black ceramic Jungens, and it's my favorite watch. And I can't remember what happened to it. I think the watch stopped working. I should get that fixed.
It was so strong they couldn't get in to fix it.
Yeah, the band went forever.
It was like Superman when he's in operation.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, I kind of buried the lead here, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this one. This is a story we should probably have led with, although, I don't know. This comes from a Medium post, Will Strafik. 76 popular apps confirmed vulnerable to silent interception of TLS protected data.
Will is a super, super smart guy.
Okay.
There's a few people who know like as much about iPhone inner workings as people inside Apple, and he's probably close to being one of them.
So he's an InfoSec expert. They have a program, a web-based mobile app analysis service called Verify.ly. And apparently, there are a lot. That's a lot of apps, but the real concern is 19 iOS applications. It's a high-risk vulnerability because they've confirmed that you can intercept important information, financial or medical service login credentials, and or session authentication tokens for logged in users with a man-in-the-middle attack. Normally, of course, when apps send data, you want to use TLS. You want to send that data secured. But apparently, is it a flaw in Apple's implementation of TLS?
So just for some background, Will was, I believe he led the chronic jailbreak team back when that was a huge, when jailbreaking was a very big endeavor. So he's been doing a lot of the sort of spelunking into the inner workings of iOS for a long time, and he's been interested in security for a long time. So he put together this sort of scan. So this is really hard to stop because we've seen this problem before. Someone makes an app, and then they get a little bit of code from somebody else, and you have no idea what's in that code. And there could be all sorts of bad things buried in there. It could be a way of getting bad code into iOS apps. And this looks like either the company doesn't care or they're linking to code that doesn't care about respecting these things. And I'm hoping Apple will figure out a way of, again, every time someone these stuff gets through, they figure out new ways of auditing it. But it looks like something that's just not caught automatically.
Will's attack involved on iOS 10 inserting an invalid TLS certificate into the connection using a malicious proxy. Something that would be not so hard to do at an open Wi-Fi access point or anywhere where you were on Wi-Fi that some malefactor could get access to. He mentions which apps are vulnerable. I won't mention the low risk apps because all they give up is maybe something that your login name or something.
I believe he's being responsible by alerting the high risk apps before he's publishing.
So he isn't mentioning anything that's medium and high. Yeah. He's going to post those within 60 to 90 days after reaching out. But it's banks, medical providers. It's serious, serious stuff.
And this is one of the parts of the security community that I really like is when you start auditing these things and then you do responsible disclosure, it just makes all these apps better because mistakes are going to happen. If they're not doing it dumb or not doing it maliciously, mistakes will happen and we need people finding them.
And it's not a flaw in Apple's app transport security because they have to trust the app. Only the application developer can mitigate it because it's the networking code inside the app that is allowing this false TLS certificate. So app transport security on the iPhone will see it as a valid connection.
Yeah,
and it can't. It has to let the application judge certificate validity.
Like Leo, did you lock that door? Yes, Leo. Yeah. Did you lock that door? I know the lock works on the door. Did you lock the door? Yeah. I swear I locked the door.
So the mitigation for everybody who's listening to this, if you're using an iPhone, is to not. He says there's a short-term trick which can be used to mitigate this type of vulnerability. It's very likely only to be exploited if your connection is flowing over Wi-Fi, whether you've joined a public Wi-Fi network or a determined attacker has force joined your mobile device onto a rogue network without your knowledge. As you know, iPhones sometimes will join open Wi-Fi access points without letting you know. If you're in a public location and you need to perform a sensitive action on your mobile device, like opening the bank app, open settings and turn off Wi-Fi. The vulnerability does exist on a cellular connection, but it's, of course, much more difficult to intercept the cellular connection. And
that's common advice for people who are even using computers, not to be on public Wi-Fi networks when they're doing sensitive financial transactions, but switch to, using a cellular hotspot or something.
It's really dangerous to use these open Wi-Fi access points for a lot of reasons. I've started using the tiny hardware firewall and VPN in most cases because it's once you set it up, it's very easy. And, it's the size of a little keychain thing. And you can use it with your phone just as well as your computer. And companies, you should analyze your builds using the Verify.ly service. Just make sure you aren't using some of that dangerous code. Developers, be extremely careful when inserting network-related code and changing application behaviors. Many issues like this arise from an application, as you said, Renee, from an application developer not fully understanding the code they've borrowed. It's a very widespread practice. You take libraries or snippets.
Yep.
You go to Stack Overflow and say, how do you do this? And somebody gives you a link and you just paste it in. What about the rumor? This is coming from Barron's Tech Trader Daily, that the iPhone manufacturing will begin earlier than usual. That would make sense given the shortage that Apple's suffered for the last few quarters. Or last few releases.
Yeah, especially if it's a new design. They've when you push the bounds of technology, whether it's the Retina display in the iPhone 4 or it was the chipset, some of the 8 chipsets have done this. It's just really hard to make things. So if they can get ahead of that curve, it means that they'll have better quantity when they start to ship them.
And it also means committing to a feature set earlier than they usually do. You'd be surprised at how relatively late in the process they finally decide that, okay, we will definitely include this. We will definitely wait for another time to include that. So.
Yeah, one has to think that they've been kind of working hard on this 10th anniversary iPhone for a little longer than usual, and might be a little closer to finalizing it.
I still don't know whether they're going to do anything special about it. I'm sure they're going to do something special about the event. I think that I'm not sure if they're going to say that I'm not sure how it would go down. How they would say that. And believe this time, we decided we were really going to try hard. We were really going to make you a nice one this time. I think that they're more apt to say that nope. This is just our next level of greatness as usual every year. But I'm sure that there's going to be more dogs and more ponies in the Dog and Pony Show this September.
Well, and as Robert Scobel pointed out on Sunday, this is likely going to be the first event at the new Apple campus, right? So it's 10th anniversary of the iPhone, new Apple campus, and that's one of his arguments for why this phone might, they might do augmented reality. This phone might be clear or whatever. This is going to be a big deal.
Like the rumors are edge to edge and the wireless charging and all there's a bunch of big rumors surrounding this.
He was adamant that wireless charging is possible. I just don't think long range wireless charging is likely at all.
It might not be long range is a dream, but it might just be the problem with the inductive charging, and I have this with the Apple Watch, is it's so easy to not put it on properly or knock it off. Like I've knocked it off with my comforter at night and not realized it and woken up to an uncharged phone. So if you could just put it down within the vicinity of the charger, and if it moved a little bit during the night or you didn't put it perfectly down and it's still charged, I'd be super happy.
What do you think the distance is reasonably?
You'll find 2 or 3 dead mice around it too.
Yeah, exactly.
They're cooked. They're breakfast, Andy.
Bacon. There you go. Perfect. You can finally have your breakfast bacon without getting your foot trapped in a George Foreman grill.
It's just physics, I mean, the amount of energy attenuates at the inverse square of the distance. So it's very distance sensitive. So you'd have to, if you get a foot away, you have to 10 times more energy than you do at half a foot away. So it really gets difficult
My thing with Apple is that they don't care at all about chipsets. So just to have sort of to put a new technology and doesn't interest them, it's like, what problem can they solve? They didn't do inductive charging on the Apple Watch just to do inductive charging. It's that, like Phil Schiller said, people are coming home, they're tired, they're putting it down, and if they don't have to futz with a tiny little cord, that's way better for them. And the problem here is that people sometimes, they have trouble plugging in the cord, they don't plug it in right, they don't put on the inductive charger right, and if they can just make it more convenient,
slop of 3 inches, that would be enough.
Totally. Like Time Machine. You don't have to worry about backups. You don't have to worry about charging. Put it down here, and it will charge, and you'll be fine in the morning.
Yeah. In the case of the watch, I think it was more like they just found pogo plugs to be vulgar. And they didn't want to have something like we have on the fitness bands. We have to clip it into something to make it work.
I prefer inductance charging.
Oh yeah, no, it works perfect for things. And realize that there's so many simple ways to solve this. Like for instance, I have never had that problem with my Moto 360 watch simply because the charger that they give you to it, it's a drop-in charger. It's inductive, but you can't put it it will not stay in the charger unless it's lined up properly with the charging thing. So it's just as a mechanical stand. And also I think that both watches are helped by the fact that when you drop it into the charger, the face actually changes physically, observably into like a nightstand sort of mode. So you know when you've got it or not. So it's something to do.
Do we know what Apple, if they do wireless charging, is they're not going to do U-Beam, which is using sonic charging.
I
there was a rumor they were using another company for, but then it switched to say they were doing something internal. And if it is something internal, it's whatever gives them the desired result. They're not religious about the time.
Ubeam did have a demo, although, you know, all we have is shaky cam footage of it. There's a lot of details we don't know. And, you know, maybe they were able to, the only thing they showed is by hovering a phone over their non-inductance, it's a sonic charger, maybe 6 inches from it, they could get the phone to say, I'm charging. What we don't know is, you know, maybe it's charging for 8 months. We don't know how long.
What the efficiency is and what the time, because you're trading efficiency with a massive amount of efficiency to do this.
Right. And of course, ultrasound would be, I think, a little safer than some sort of RF or inductance charging.
Got a nuclear electromagnetic plug. Charging. Put it in, it lasts for a half-life.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll see. We have what? You think September, the announcement?
Yeah.
No reason to think it's any sooner than that.
No.
All right. Let's take a break, and I'd love to get some picks from you gentlemen as we wrap up Mac Break Weekly for the week. It's been a lot of fun. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Our show today brought to you by Texture. I love magazines. I still love magazines. What I don't love, a pile of magazines on the coffee table. The expense of buying a magazine on the newsstand just because I want to read one article. The ridiculous waste of subscribing to a magazine that I don't read. All of that just made me nuts. And so as a result, I don't subscribe to magazines anymore. And I was so thrilled when Texture came along. Texture is kind of like Netflix for magazines. You pay one low monthly rate and you get 200 of the top magazines. You get the full every page from Sports Illustrated, Consumer Reports, and New Yorker, National Geographic, Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, Vogue. I can go on and on and on. Every page of the current issue, back issues as well, plus bonus features you can't get on a magazine, like video. And I have to say, if you like photography, the way these, like National Geographic, for instance, looks on an iPad is so much nicer than the screened print version of those photos. It really looks good. Whether it's artificial intelligence or self-driving cars or wireless electricity, all of this is covered by these magazines. Every tech breakthrough, every story from PC World, Mac World, Wired Magazine. The Texture, of course, makes it easy to find and enjoy the articles you want. Daily recommendations, exclusive interactive features, videos, and more. And I think that the other thing to remember is Texture is supporting great journalism. By doing this, you are subscribing. You are supporting these magazines without the waste of paper and so forth. The magazines save money. Printing a magazine is expensive. Magazines love this. You get some of the most trustworthy, credible publications in the world. Time Magazine, The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, The Atlantic. Texture in these times is a great go-to source to access not just your favorite, not just People Magazine, but the latest and greatest in investigative journalism, U.S. politics, domestic and international news. Keep up with the world. At normally $9.99 a month, and you get over 200 magazines. And by the way, up to 5 devices, which means you can share it with your family, which is exactly what Lisa and I do. And you can favorite magazines, have them automatically downloaded, so they're on your iPad when you get on the plane. You don't have to worry about it. In fact, Texture was selected as one of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps. Good reason, too. I love Texture. Now, searchable too, right? You can search it. You can mark what you like. You can check out back issues. Right now, Texture is offering a 14-day free trial at texture.com/twit. 2 weeks to try this. Do it, you know, before you go on a trip or before, you know. Now, try it. I guarantee you're going to love it. texture.com/twit. And it's one of the reasons I don't have to take anything but my iPad with me these days. I got everything I want on every trip. I've got my audiobooks, I've got my music, and I've got 200 magazines. texture.com/twit. Andy Iannocco, time for a pick of the week, my friend.
This is an upgrade from a previous pick. I previously did a pick of the Silicon Dust HD Home Run. This is this was an $89 box. You can just plug into any antenna or your cable and then plug into your Ethernet, and it will simply serve TV to any app on any platform anywhere on your network that can tune in TV broadcast. So you can just download an app for your Apple TV, an app for your phone, app for your iPad, anything, and now you can watch live TV. If you've got a Plex server or other compatible hardware, it will even act as a DVR and record stuff that you can watch it later or transcode it and then keep that to your video library. I still like it a lot, but just this week I upgraded to the next level up, which is the HD Home Run Extend. It does the exact same thing. The only thing that it does extra, that this will automatically transcode on the fly to H.264 format. The $89 version of it, the smaller, cheaper one, will record, will stream it in the whatever format the cable company or your antenna delivers, which is just basic MPEG. The only problem with that is that it's not a really efficient mechanism for streaming. Also, one of the reasons why I wanted to get this in the first these tuners in the first place is because I want to be able to record things like the Super Bowl and have it permanently, just have it permanently part of my library. I can do that with the cheaper one, but it means that at some point I've got to toss it into Handbrake and convert it to an H.264, just so that it'll be an easy thing for me to copy onto my phones and an easy thing for devices to play. I noticed, for instance, that my Apple TV, even my current generation, my latest generation Apple TV, has a problem streaming the captured stream directly off of antenna. But this box will deliver a signal that's just simply H.264. Not only that, but you can also, through configuration, tell it like what kind of stream do you want to convert it from. So, for instance, the antenna is delivering a 1080p broadcast, but you can have it automatically transcode it down to, let's say, 480. If you're just capturing it for something you can put on your phone, or it's something that you know that the only reason why you have this is so that while you're traveling, you can still watch TV that's been recorded the night before. You want something that's super compact? Great, it'll transcode automatically something super compact. But that's basically what I'm getting it for. And you can tell the difference between the two because the other one is I still got it plugged in upstairs. I didn't bring it down, but it's about half this size and it's made out of plastic. This is like big, and it's got like venting. It's got heat dissipation on the sides and the back and the sides. So the upshot is that with this, not only will I be able to watch live TV, but when I play back my Colbert Report, if it's a great show, the late show with Stephen Colbert, if I really, really love it, I don't have to then put it into a desktop conversion queue. I can just simply say, great, let's save that. And it will just simply, because of Plex, I can just simply keep it in my library. And it's there forever and ever. It's about $100 more. This is $169 versus $79 for the other one. But the other advantage is that now I've got, because each of these boxes has two independent tuners inside them, now I can watch and record four different channels simultaneously, or be watching different shows while I'm recording others. So as you can guess, I'm kind of really happy with the way that all these little TV devices have helped me become sort of a OCD, if it's worth watching, it's worth recording kind of guy.
HD Home Run, a lot of people from Silicon Dust have been telling me how great this is. So I'm glad to hear. Now, you got to have over-the-air signal.
It means you have to be in the United States of America. But the other great thing about...
Well, I don't know. I'm up here. We all I can get is channel 50.
Well, here's the other thing. I had a problem. I had the same problem where all the channels I could get were like, I could get NBC, but I vehemently don't like the Tonight Show. I want to watch the Colbert Show.
Right.
But the great thing about this is that you can put this anywhere. So I've got this actually way, way, way upstairs in a guest bedroom. So it's on the second floor, and it's also in a window that's facing the broadcasting towers. So for the first time, I'm actually getting every single network and even all the weird channels, like the one that shows the reruns of the DeKavitt show that I didn't know existed, because you can put your physical antenna wherever it has to be. You don't have to put it like right next to the TV set. So definitely worth trying out, especially with the first time you're in a situation where I'm in the kitchen. I can now watch TV on my iPad live without having to drag another TV set into another room. I used to use the Sling Box for that, the cable, this box you plug into your cable, and it works nice, but it will only work with Sling Box software, which is good on some apps, some platforms, not good on the other. This streams in a standard format, and there are all kinds of third-party apps that will allow you to tune in the signal. So it's not as though it's just going to work on your Apple TV or it's just going to work on your phone. It literally works on every single device that has a screen. So nice. It was a great failure for me.
Nice. Renee, was it you who taught me about French girls?
I don't know, but I don't know how to answer that without any more contact.
And we have a show title.
I'm trying to remember. I know it was somebody told me about this, and I don't think it was ever a pick on this show. It might have been on iOS Today, or maybe it was a fever dream. But this is a really great app called French Girls, which, by the way, has the best app icon ever of a redheaded bearded man. So,
which is not a French girl.
People. It's not a French girl. But and in fact, it has nothing to do with French girls. The idea is this is a place for artists to share their art. It's kind of Instagram for drawings, but you can also post.
Draw me like one of your French girls. I get it.
Yeah,
like
from Titanic. That's what exactly. It's from Titanic. And I have it. Let me open it up here, because it's really fun to go through the Explore and just see. Now, I have no artistic ability, so you're not going to see me posting any of my paintings. Although, I'm looking at the best of right now. I mean, some of the silly stuff people have posted, but some of it's really good. And I just thought Renee might have told me, because you like to play with your iPad and your pencil.
So this is Serenity too.
I think it's Serenity. I think you guys would love this app. It's basically, think of it as Instagram for drawings. You see, it has commenting. It looks a lot like Instagram.
Enough Batman pictures. We've got to fix that.
Yeah. Well, you could put some Batman pictures in there. And also, you can post your own a photo in here, and somebody might, if you beg nicely, draw it like draw me like your French girls. So I think this is kind of a fun, it's a free app, although they have in-app purchases for a variety of filters, each of them 99 cents. I don't know. I just thought, for some reason, I thought Renee might have.
No, but now I'm upset.
Now you got to do it. Now you got to do it. I swear this guy has a Twit logo for an eyeball. I don't know if that's a coincidence or what. French girls on the iOS platform. Renee, what do you got for us?
So we kind of spoiled it a little bit during the show, but it's big news, so it's hard to avoid. And that is the BeatX headphones are going to be available starting this Friday. A couple things to be aware of. They're going to be in more colors than Apple has on the page right now. Right now you can pre-order them. Well, you can't pre-order, but they're up there for you to look at pictures of in black or white. But you'll also be able to get them in gray and a blue color. No, sadly, no product red yet, although I hope that comes in their next big promotion. And what's neat about the BeatX is they have the same W1 chip in them, which means they'll get the same easy pairing interface and management that you get from things like the AirPods or the Beats Solo. But unlike the AirPods, first, they're not the Apple EarPod shapes. And, some people just can't wear EarPods. Either they don't have sufficient area in their ear to hold them in, or they find them painful. So this is more of a traditional in-ear experience. It's just you have the little buds, you stick them in, and you're fine. Also, they're connected to each other. And one of the big selling features of AirPods is that they're not connected. You don't have to worry about a cable. But some people really like the security of a cable. If the EarPod falls out, it just sort of dangles around your neck. It doesn't fall down into the ground or the snow or the water or something else. So this gives you that sort of long lanyard loop that goes from the left to the right-hand side. And it has built-in physical controls, which, again, some people lament the lack of on the AirPod. So you can control voice. You've got a microphone on there. You can control the volume, play, pause, all from the little remote control built into the wire. So they are wireless in that they don't have to be connected to your phone, but they are wired in that one connects to the other. And they get the advantages of the control and the security that comes with those. So $149, so they're priced relatively the same as the AirPods, but I think they're going to hit a sweet spot for people who like the idea of all this technology, but really wanted a more traditional sort of Bluetooth headphone form factor.
Nice. You haven't tried them yet, though, right?
I have tried them, but I do not own a pair, nor do I have a pair for review.
Are you going to buy one, you think?
Yes. Right. I think I'll end up using the AirPods more, but I just want to try these out. I like to sort of get an internal barometer for these things, and people are going to ask a lot, so I feel like it's my duty to be able to have an answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And we should reiterate that the AirPods have a firmware update, and
yes,
check and see if you've got it, and if you haven't, you should update. What is the current firmware? Do we know?
I forget the noise.
Somebody
it's a small
it in chat.
Yeah, it's a small number, and it should happen overnight if you plug them in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And I maybe wasn't as clear as I ought to have been that French girls, the whole idea behind it is that you get a take a picture and you choose an artist and you then pay them to make a drawing for you, so you can, you know, so there are a lot of artists on here, and I think that I haven't done it yet. But I'm going to pick a nice picture and get a drawing.
Leo maybe caricature.
I'm thinking of Lisa for Valentine's Day.
Ooh.
Wouldn't that be a nice gift? And they have a good monetization strategy, because then you can get canvas prints from them of the drawing.
And belated happy anniversary, Leo.
Yeah. Oh, no. I gave her a nice gift for that, birthday and anniversary. So now it all comes together. I got a few days for Valentine's Day.
she was smart. She clustered.
Yeah. No, I don't know how smart that is. Next week is Valentine's Day, and we will be back. Maybe I'll get, for both of you, I'll get a beautiful painting. Because you guys are my Valentines. I heart you. Andy Yannacco from the Chicago. I can't do this. I don't know how to do it.
You want to know what love is. You want me to tell you.
Andy Yannacco, Chicago Sun-Times. There it is. He can do it. He's been practicing, apparently.
Can we do the loss in translation, like, you know, Starshine effect from there?
He also does a bunch of podcasts you'll find at replay.fm. And what else? Anything else you want to plug?
No, so mostly the stuff on my blog at otko.com. I'm putting stuff on Instagram after I discovered it rediscovered it existed last year, and or gave up on trying to fight. Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, you got to be there. It's always a pleasure. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, too, to Renee Ritchie from Montreal and imore.com. He can do it, too. Why am I so...
We're doing it for you, Leo.
Yeah, I can't. Anyway, I'll do this. I could do this. Actually, Steve says you got to stick the thumb out if you're doing Live Long and Prosper. There you go. Renee does great podcasts, too, at imore.com, including the Apple Talk podcast. Check it out.
I just revamped the page because it was a little bit hard for people to keep track of. And if you want a deep dive into the earnings, Neil Seibert, Michael Gartenberg, and myself spent about an hour and a half going through it in excruciating minutia, which some people is a super big party.
No, I look forward to that. I'm glad you guys do that, because there is so much to talk about. We spent 15 or 20 minutes, but yeah, you can do a lot more. So
yeah, and they're smart analyst type people.
Yeah, yep. Great stuff. Thank you for being here, for listening to our little podcast. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800, 1900 UTC. If you want to tune in and watch live, you can at twit.tv/live, live.twit.tv. Those are different pages with different players. You know, your choice. You can also get the YouTube live version at youtube.com/twit. And subscribe there or at our website to each and every show, because you don't want to miss an episode. twit.tv/mbw. Now I'm sad to say it's time to get back to work, because break time is over. Bye-bye.